Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So I feel like new year's like new me, right? So I've been thinking about new me, and so I've decided to go and get this thing called an Invisalign
liposuction. You're getting it, liposuction, finally put us all out of our misery.
Firstly, it's not like double barrel, it's not liposuction, it's liposuction.
Yeah, liposuction.
It rolls off the tongue a bit easier.
Well, look, you're the expert.
Well, I'm just telling you, you know. So anyway, I've new year, new
me. You're going to move the fat from your penis abs and put it onto your bum.
Move the fat from my abs and put it into my butt.
Isn't that what they do now? That's
a butt lift.
The Kardashian. You're trying to be a Kardashian, aren't you?
No, I don't think they get. If you have a butt, like a butt implant, you don't get it from your abs, do you? Where do you get it from?
I think it's a lift, so they just take the bottom of your bum and. There or rather, from the top of your bum. And
you know so much
here
about
he is.
This.
Here he is.
Listen, we share the same resolutions. I got a great bum. Thank you, though.
Do you know what? Weirdly, I do have a very good bum.
Well, you put it about a bit. I've got to be honest.
Yeah. It's
follow
out
you
there.
On Instagram and it's...
it's out there.
Yeah. It's weird. I've never seen it. So.
You have seen it. You've seen it plenty of times.
You've got to dig a little deep.
Actually, I have a picture of it.
Why do you have a picture of my butt?
Because it's when you were... I was looking back through my Dropbox things from when we lived together, uh-huh. And there's that one of you having when you got your tattoo, and then you had a fake tan, it's like literally night and day the tan line.
Look, Josh, thing you got to know about me is that I like a fake tan. I've had it once or twice in my life. Okay, I like to get naked a little bit. All right, that's just what happens. All right, but weirdly, as I was saying, New Year, new me, New Year's resolutions. I haven't done a fake tan. I'm not going to do fake tanning anymore. But I am going to do Invisalign. So I got this Invisalign in my mouth.
What's wrong with your, let's see.
Can you hear it? Can you hear a slight lisp?
No, let's see.
I haven't.
But were your teeth that crooked before?
No, I don't know. I don't know why.
You got a great smile.
Yeah, why the hell have I gone and done it?
Basically,
it's also not cheap.
Exactly. Anything that Jamie can spend money on, he will.
Oh, I see.
They're not anything.
Anything.
What else will I spend it on?
Botox, fillers, a butt implant, hair transplant.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sort of details of our lives. In the studio today, very excited author Josh Roberts.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No, Josh. Hey, listen, I'm so excited that you're on. Honestly, I couldn't be more excited just because I'm an incredibly anxious person. So you're going to hopefully cure everything.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
That I have.
So this is really a therapy session.
Yeah, totally a therapy session. Hey, Josh, I'm going to quickly just explain to the listeners. So you went to school with a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
A guy called Alexis, a really close friend of mine. He raves about you just in general, says you're one of the greatest
guys.
He
also just raves a lot.
Yeah. He also raves.
Yeah.
He raved about you loads, just as a great guy. And he mentioned that you had written this book. And I thought it would be better to get you on the podcast. So why don't you explain who you are, where you're from, and what's the book about?
Sure. Well, firstly, thanks so much for having me. It's super exciting to be here. Like you say, yeah, I've written a book. It's called Anxious Man, Notes on a Life Lived Nervously. And it's a book about, well, I guess what it's like to wake up one morning and to discover that your mind has collapsed, which is exactly what happened to me. So 4 years ago, went to a leaving party for some mates who were going to South Africa. And
a mind-leaving party. Don't know why I just joked about that. That's really unfunny to joke about.
No, we got to laugh. You can't laugh. What can you do? I went to bed as a fairly normal, seemingly successful mid-20-something and woke up the next day. Well, woke up with a hangover, of course, but also woke up into a really savage panic attack. And
you woke up in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's if you've seen in Hollywood movies or whatever, that kind of wakes up.
It like was, you're drowning.
Yeah, it was exactly that sensation.
And what had you done the night before that was so
I mean, generally, I'd been drunk enough to dance, but not much more than that.
Really?
It was the third night on the bounce, so I'd been out Thursday, Friday. This was Saturday.
Classic.
The classic.
How old were you at this moment, Josh?
26.
Okay, 26. Yeah.
And what happened was I'd had panic attacks before, little kind of blips in my earlier in my 20s, but I'd always written it off as being, you know, like burning the candle at both ends kind of thing. And the difference this time was it just never went away. So usually a panic attack would last for about 30 seconds, and this one lasted for about 2 hours.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was pretty grim, actually. And then when it did kind of eventually subside, it didn't subside, it changed. It went from being an immediate fear. You've had panic attacks, right?
That's why I sort of really resonated with you, because I've had this kind of same experience in terms of a really intense panic attack. You know, you were there during the whole time. I had to keep talking to Francis quite a lot about it. I woke up, same thing as you, been partying quite a lot. I was about 22, 23 at the time, woke up one morning, and actually it wasn't even the morning, I just woke up in the day, felt normal. I hadn't really been to bed that night before. I was kind of feeling a bit like, oof, whatever. Anyway, I was watching The Voice on TV, and the guy said on The Voice, well, I had bronchitis, and something in my body went, oh, and I had a panic attack, which lasted for about 3 hours, and then it didn't go.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah. It just didn't go. It was intense.
Well, it was like that for me, except it was at its most intense for a couple of hours, and then really it lasted for about a week of not sleeping, constant worry. And then eventually, I'd been to A&E like 3 times. I went to see 2 different NHS GPs. Eventually, I got in with a mate's dad, who's a private GP, and he very quickly diagnosed me with a generalised anxiety disorder. Which is kind of what it says on the tin. You worry about pretty much everything. So worry about stupid shit like missing trains or getting dumped or getting fired or weird stuff about forgetting to breathe or my heart stopping involuntarily, like all these kind of weird things.
Well, you would forget that your heart would stop?
No, it's not worry possible. About it.
You worry about it. And worse than that, when you cross over into having what I have as a kind of clinical problem, is when you worry about those worries. So a normal person, for example, might worry about not sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
I will spend a whole day worrying that I'm never going to enjoy my life because I'll always be worrying about sleeping. Does that make sense? It's a kind of like second order.
It's worrying about worrying.
It's worrying about worrying.
Wait, hang on a second. I think I have this.
You worry about worrying about worrying?
It's a kind of Russian doll situation. Yeah, yeah, you can end up in real kind of tangles. Oh, and then the last thing I should say is that you kind of layer on a bunch of guilt, which is very typical of anxiety disorders, but also depressive disorders. I'm a middle class, white, heterosexual dude, like, you know, what do I have to worry about? Yeah. Of course, the answer is nothing. And you kind of beat yourself up.
God, this is...
that kind of third...
Yeah, this is totally interesting because I feel like I've had that. The thing is, look, the reason why this podcast is like important, right, is that it's the beginning of January, it's 2020, loads of people are talking about different things. We've spoken a lot about mental health on the podcast, so that's why I thought it would be super interesting to get you on. But like, I've had those times where we're super anxious and all those different things, but then I had something called depersonalization once. Which is where I thought...
That's terrifying.
I thought I was floating. It was freaking awful. And so I basically woke up one day, and I was, I think, just from so much stress and anxiety, I went to a depersonalization state and I felt like I was floating and incredibly anxious. But then I used to worry about breathing and things like that as well.
Yeah, it's very common. And the difference between boys and girls is that girls are pretty good at talking about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And often all you need to hear is someone else say, oh, yeah, I've had that. And you kind of go, oh, OK, well, maybe it's not this huge existential thing. Blokes are a little bit, you know, maybe not quite as advanced at talking about it in that sense, which is why it tends to bubble along and
So it hangs, but surely, get worse. Surely, OK, it's from something though, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I talk about this quite a lot in the book because it's part of human nature is to want to discover a cause for, you know, everything has to have a cause.
Yeah.
And when we don't have a cause, we really struggle with that. It's why we buy insurance or why we invent religions, you know, that kind of not knowing. And I think with mental health, like, it's probably the confluence of so many different factors, genetic factors, things to do with observing these behaviours in our parents. Mm. And then all of the external environmental stuff, bad things that happen to you, bad things that you do to yourself, be that boozing or drugs or not exercising or not sleeping.
There we go, Francis.
Right, yeah, Francis has woken up.
Yeah, I haven't slept in months. I just woke up.
So you pile all of these sort of toxins into your body.
And that's what kind of brings, I think, you know, leads to a moment where it all comes together. But I don't think there's any one specific thing. And actually, in trying to recover from one of these problems, the search for the cause can actually become a problem in its own right. Because if you have a weird is the wrong word, if you have an obsessive mind, obsessively searching for the thing that causes your anxiety or depression or whatever can become a bit of a problem. For example, going to the sleep example, very often you'll find people who suffer from insomnia will develop these huge lists of rules by which they live their lives in order to allow them to sleep. So they will.
And then if one thing they can't fill it, then they're suddenly.
Exactly. And I used to have exactly this. So, you know, if we would go on holiday, my girlfriend and I, and the bed wasn't big enough, or there wasn't a secondary sleeping option that I used to call it.
If you didn't have that lube, you'd be furious. Where the hell is that shit?
Well, quite. And so,
can't,
you know,
sleep without my lube.
Can't sleep without a lube. So, but, you know, if you don't have these things, then it becomes the search for the cause becomes a kind of source of panic and anxiety in itself.
Because you're constantly searching for that solution, right?
Yeah, and what happens when you let go of that and you go, okay, fuck it, I've got this problem, and it's maybe a bit like hay fever or eczema or whatever, it kind of comes and goes. Once you get to that state of being, you have a lot more, you're objective about it.
Okay, but
you're on top of it. But
there's a few things here, right? Because, okay, there's this like whole example, right? Because before, lots of people talk about, you know, our grandparents and our parents, that mental health wasn't spoken about that much, right? And is there a point in saying that because we've now labeled it so much, once you label something, you can never unlabel it? So if someone says to you or to Francis or whatever, you have anxiety, you have depression, you have this, or you have that, you never think that you don't have it then. And so therefore it makes it almost worse. Or is that not the case?
So definitely there is an element of it being a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And when I've spoken to therapists and whatnot researching the book, they definitely is an element of the more people talk about it, the more people come forward and say that they have these problems.
Yeah.
I happen to think that most of the people do have, you know, a clinical problem. Most of the people who say they struggle with depression or anxiety probably do struggle with depression or anxiety. And I would say believing the people who may be over-egging it or you know, maybe there is a degree of attention seeking or whatever, I think believing those people is a price worth paying for believing the people who really do have a problem.
Well, it's also, I guess, people who are sort of hypochondriacs, you know, in the sphere of like mental illnesses, you know, anything is a potential you know, a symptom of an overarching mental condition, you know, that is kind of difficult to disprove.
Definitely. But I think,
or prove, you know.
You're 100% right, but I think throughout history, we've erred on the side of this probably isn't a problem. And it's brought us to a situation where, you know, like suicide is a huge problem amongst people our age and whatnot. So I think maybe that's how, if we've had a few years of trying the other way and kind of erring on the side of shit, maybe you have something that we could help you with, or, you know, maybe there are areas of your life you could change. That would be a good thing.
Well, I think going back to what you were saying about this inanswerable void, right, which is just present, ever present in reality, which actually, you know, you said people invented religions. You know, I do think that religions arose out of necessity because of that unanswerable void. And in the absence of any kind of sort of that sort of purpose-built thing to fill that void of nothingness, people can find themselves in, inexplicable anxiety.
Yeah, definitely. And...
I think with this sort of actually a decline in religion, you know, we're seeing a lot more mental health issues.
Yeah. Francis hates religion.
No, I'm just saying. I do think that there's a point to it. There's a historical point. It wasn't just like invented for people to take over the world. It was like a necessity from
that need to have an explanation, as in humans weren't comfortable with the idea of not knowing why we were here.
Because we couldn't. There's no real way of finding out.
Exactly. Know, yeah. But in the face of that, we end up creating religions. Or, you know, I'm sure there are religious believers who listen to the podcast who would take to that statement to task. But I suppose my point around the kind of mental health piece is, once you can let go of the constant need to find the cause, you actually find that the solution arrives much quicker.
Yeah, okay, it's like acceptance, really, rather than...
Exactly.
But then surely that goes completely against what therapy is trying to do. Therapy is trying to get to the root of the issue.
Depends what therapy you're doing. So kind of psychoanalysis, where you go back and deconstruct your life and how does your childhood affect your current present and all that kind of stuff. Definitely. Cognitive behavioural therapy, which is
totally
what I've done, is much more about, okay, maybe the causes are interesting, but let's focus on solving the symptoms. It's much more practical in that sense, which is why I like it, and actually appeals to lots of blokes as well, because it's kind of really tangible and practical.
God, that's it. I'm not even kidding. When I was going through my period of depersonalisation, so I had my anxious period for having like this panic attack. I didn't even know what this panic attack was. Thought I was dying at like 22, 23. Then for 4 months after that, I just had to pretend everything was fine. And if I spoke about it, it became real. So I never spoke about it. I just didn't say anything, just dealt with it. And it kind of went away. And I think I was probably drinking too much. That was probably...
Just all that drinking.
It was all that drinking that I was drinking to.
But you're off the booze, right? I was listening...
Yeah, I'm off. So I'm going to get into that now. So then that happened. And then I kind of was in this sort of anxious sort of state, I suppose, for quite a while. And I didn't really know what the hell was going on. And then someone said, you have anxiety. And so that kind of made it... Someone said, you got anxiety. I went, okay, this is what this is. So it's now been labelled as something. But then the problem was that when someone labelled it, I went, well, I'm anxious. That's going to make me feel worse.
Who said you got anxiety?
I went to this doctor. He said,
someone in the street.
Not someone in the street. Said, hey, you look anxious, man. Hey,
you've got anxiety.
Hey,
issues.
Look at you. You got anxiety. No, this doctor said it to me. He said, you've got anxiety. And I went, what the hell? Why do I have anxiety? Anyway, that kind of went on. And it kind of came and went like hay fever. As you said, it was almost seasonal where it would come and go. And it would be depending on how well I was looking after my own body and situations. And then 27 years old, I remember it so well. I was on a huge amount of pressure. I had all these different things going on. And it's that typical thing which someone says. I remember I was playing tennis 2 days before. And I was playing tennis and suddenly I had this feeling of doom, of something terrible was going to happen. I thought, what the hell have I... What's going to happen that's really bad? Something bad is going to happen. And I was like, what is this? And that's what a lot of people talk about. You have this sense of doom when you feel depressed or lots of different reasons. And I was like, okay, well, that passed. And then I was sitting in Ciccone's restaurant. Lovely. Having a lovely chicken salad. And it was something like this fog came over my eyes. And it was like a fog, and it was called, and I didn't really understand what it was, and it was...
The Dementors.
It was the Dementors coming in. But this fog, and it almost like a dreamlike state happened, and I went, okay, this is weird. And I ignored it, and it was still there the next day, and I ignored it, still there the next day. And so I went to a therapist and said, I'm kind of feeling this thing. He didn't understand it, so he sent me to a psychotherapist. And the psychotherapist said, you have depersonalization. I said, what's that? And he said, depersonalization is where your body goes into autopilot, almost. It's where you've been put under a lot of stress, strain, anxiety, depression, whatever it is, one of these things, PTSD. All these things can cause this state that you're in right now. And I went, that's not very good. But he also said to me, he said, but also it can come when you are experiencing psychosis. And automatically me being the catastrophizer, I went, well, I've got psychosis.
Right.
Here we go. This is going to be, I've got psychosis. So I went with that and thought I was going mad. And for 6 months, I thought I was going mad. I'd wake up every day, see this fog, and I was like, that's it. And for 6 months, I just thought that was it for the rest of my life. And it was horrendous. And then I had that thing where I would think about breathing. And I would go, oh, am I breathing properly? I'm thinking about it. And then I would worry about breathing. Yeah, and then I would have that sleeping thing and all these different things. And I then turned to fitness. And actually fitness and exercising was the thing that really kind of helped me out.
Fitness is, I mean, to look at me, you wouldn't fucking
Josh,
know
you, hey, Josh, man, you look, hey, Josh, you look like you're lifting some weights
this
over there, baby.
This is actually the slimmest I've been. Thank you for thank you for
well done. 2020, baby.
But yeah, exercise and mental health are... I mean, like, completely intrinsically linked. Definitely.
And sleep as well.
And sleep.
Sleep. I didn't realise how... Francis, if we're totally serious, you know, we didn't sleep that much for many years because we were constantly working. But we didn't... Yeah.
Round the clock.
Never called that before.
Round the clock we were... But I didn't... sleep is freaking everything.
It is, but again, maybe if you, you know, if you go through a period of time where you're not getting a lot of sleep... And then you know, particularly nowadays, it's so prevalent in the media, people telling you how important it is. Get more sleep, go to bed earlier, get a full night, you need 8 hours. And you'll sit there going, fuck, I haven't slept for 3 days, which is irritating enough. And now I'm being told that it's the most important thing. You know?
I used to find it more difficult to sleep when I haven't slept, you know what I mean? Like, then you'll get... I did suffer from insomnia when I was at school. And I, especially also when I have, like, an early flight to catch the next morning and I know that I need to get to bed, then I just can't get to sleep. I'm just sort of sitting
what are you thinking about?
Thinking about the... I'm imagining myself sleeping through my alarm and not getting...
I can't wait to get on that flight.
But then I inevitably just, like, I'm just exhausted on the flight. But, I mean, I've never really suffered from a panic attack. But I have suffered from anxiety, you know, at various points in my life, particularly when I was drinking a lot.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And, you know, that sort of boozer's gloom.
The next anxiety.
Day. Yeah, the black dog.
Yeah.
It comes from, there's a number of reasons why even people who don't have clinical mental health problems suffer the morning after. Primarily, it's brain chemistry. Booze is both people think of booze as being either a stimulant or a depressant. So they'll say, you know, like champagne is a stimulant and gin is a depressant. In reality, all alcohol is both a depressant and a stimulant. And that kind of imbalance is what the next day gives you that kind of fear about things you might have said or done or how much money you spent or all of that kind of stuff. So it's very,
some
very
other
common
things for Jamie.
What are you suggesting?
Yeah, you know.
What?
You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Hashtag me too.
Oh, Jesus, what have I walked into?
Oh, there we go. I think booze and that sort of hangover, that alcohol sort of hangover feeling made me so anxious before. And a lot of the listeners probably are feeling the same way. Josh, can you explain, because there are a lot of, you know, whenever we talk about mental health and things like that and anxiety and depression, and it's actually quite hard to, you know, a lot of people who are feeling anxious things that still don't want to admit that they have mental health. And probably I'm probably one of those people who don't really admit that I have.
Other than on this podcast. Millions of people.
Yeah, I kind of admit it, but I probably
don't. You keep your cards close to your chest.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, look, if someone comes up to me and goes, hey, I'm not fucking anxious, wanker. But it is, it's almost like you said, shameful. And I think a lot of people would feel shameful. And actually listening to this podcast will help a lot of people kind of go, okay, can you explain, you know, as you said, your experience with it, you suddenly felt this feeling. You said you felt minor panic attacks, but you passed them off. When you suddenly felt this huge panic attack and it didn't disappear, what happened to your mental state? What did you start to feel? Did you internalize everything? Did you open up? Did you start speaking to people? What was the process?
Yeah, so you go through different phases. But I mean, in that initial first week, I really didn't sleep for 3 or 4 days.
Jesus, that's intense.
Yeah, it was
not even like a wink.
Mate, not even a wink.
What were you doing? Just lying in bed, just looking up?
I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I got through a lot of Desert Island Discs.
And Private Parts, well done, man. You got through them
all. Yeah. Actually, was this pre-Private Parts?
This is probably pre-Private Parts.
Yeah, I would have listened to Private Parts. That is a cure for insomnia.
Would have made you more anxious. Now I'm doubly anxious.
But yeah, it was a lot of just lying in bed, staring at the ceiling and panicking. And when you're not doing that, you're like...
Are you working at this point?
Yeah, I was working throughout it. So I would not sleep, go to work, come home, not sleep, go to work, come home, not sleep, go to work. Oh, and when I was at work, I mean, I wasn't really working. I spent a lot of time crying in the bogs. Not a particularly enjoyable thing to do.
And sorry, just to cut you off. You're crying because of the way you're feeling or because you felt sad?
It's fucking inescapable. And you're... thoughts, it's completely involuntary, so you have no control over the stuff that pops into your head, and it's completely obsessive. So I couldn't think of anything beyond, I mean, I couldn't, you know, like walk to prep to get lunch and get there and think, fuck, you know, I've no idea what you can't even focus on what to buy for lunch because your brain is just constantly going, you're so fucked, this is it, you're going to be worrying the whole of your life, nothing's ever going to get better, you're never going to sleep again, da, da, da. It's just going like round and round and round in your head. So it was really, really difficult, and it was like that probably for about 6 months to a year. Then I made a number of changes to the way that I kind of live my life, and things get better.
What did you? So this is quite key, right? So you felt this way for 6 to 12 months, and what a lot of people think is the same thing as you said—that constant cycle going on in your head, going, "Well, I'm going to be like this forever." And then once again, you catastrophize everything. I'm going to be like this forever. I'm never going to be able to work. I'm not going to be able to have a family. I'm going to lose all my friends. This is, and you go through this thing that makes you even more anxious, right? So you constantly go down this.
I think you should have written this book,
dude. I feel like I should. Have. You stole it. Oh, God.
If only he could write.
My I still don't know how to spell Q. I don't know how to spell Q. How do you spell Q?
Q is a letter, mate.
No, not
as in.
No, so whenever it's, you know, oh, getting Q up over there. How the fuck? I mean,
Q-U-E-U-E. Is that right?
Yeah. So, well, there are actually
so
two.
Patronizing.
You could also
No, I'm just working out of my own mind.
You could Q-U-E-U-E.
Yeah.
But you could also spell it Q-U-E.
That's a snooker cue.
Yeah, that's a snooker cue.
Sorry, Francis is an idiot. My dad, I think I get it from my dad. My dad turned to me once, said he was writing a letter and went, do you know how you spell people?
Piopple.
Piopple. Poople.
Piopple. Anyway, so you have this constant turmoil in your head, and it's kind of crazy. And then, and it's the same with sort of, it's the same with depression as well, where from what I've spoken to people about and kind of read and all these different things, is that you go into this, you almost self-loathe yourself, where you get that shameful feeling, you catastrophize, you think this is never going to finish, and that just goes down and down and down. And actually your mind becomes so weak that you can't think about anything else apart from the negative feelings that you're feeling. Yeah. And every single thing you pick up on saying, so what will happen is that you like for breath, for example, you'll get short of breath and you go, well, I can't breathe. And then you're obsessed about not being able to breathe properly. Or you...
Someone will tweet you something. You'll be like, everyone hates me.
Also, I think what's important to point out when we do this podcast is that even though I think it's, you know, it's very easy to talk about mental health and all these different things in a very negative way. And and I think that is totally wrong to talk about. Listen, it's a horrible thing to occur to anyone. And it happens, you know, Francis said it happens to him, get anxious, this happened to me, Josh, of course, it happens to you, and a lot to our listeners happen to. And we're not joking about the symptoms at all, but it's fun to make it humorous, and that's important, right? Because if you speak about it in a humorous way, at least you're making lightheartedness of a serious situation.
I completely agree. And one of the things that I think holds back the conversation around mental health is that it can be seen as being very kind of dour, you know? And if we can, I guess, try and be a bit more irreverent about it or whatever, then... And if that engages people in a way that it doesn't before, then I think that'd be a good thing.
Totally. I just want to ask if we had the question of the week. How did you start? You know, you're a guy. You're a lot of males are proud. You know, and when you what are you laughing at?
Nothing. Come on.
No, go on.
No. I was just laughing at the. Yeah, come on. Go on. Keep going.
Yeah, okay. Fine. I will. But a lot of guys are proud, and it's a big moment to kind of speak about it or accept it or talk to someone saying, this is the way I'm feeling. Doesn't matter if it's to your girlfriend, to your mum, to your
dad,
to your boyfriend, to your friends, to anyone. When was that moment? Because that's a key moment in any experience of what you're dealing with. When was that moment that you spoke to someone about it?
Yeah,
it,
so in a way, I was lucky that it was as bad as it was, because it wasn't an option for me not to talk to people.
Okay.
It was that bad. I told my boss after the first week, again, because it was obvious I was like spending a lot of time in the bogs.
So when you were in the bogs, were you I need to write a book about this?
Yeah, it was like either it's IBS or something else.
Just doing a load of cocaine. You're going to the bogs. You're then coming back and you're shaking.
Crying.
Like, red eyes.
Crying,
red sniffing.
Eyes. Sniffing and looking really anxious.
Exactly.
He's doing a lot of cocaine.
Chatting shit.
Chatting. Sounding like he's going mad. Yeah.
Oh, I wrote this book last night.
I haven't slept in 4 nights. Oh, he's definitely going to have to fire him. He's a drug addict.
So I told my boss probably within a week, and then I told my parents, within the same kind of frame of mind.
Well, it's good that you spoke to people, because probably a lot of people...
Most people don't. That's
they
the
don't.
Thing.
And then sometimes it ends in a very tragic way.
Well, exactly.
As you said, biggest killer under 45 for males is suicide.
It's mad.
It's crazy, right? And it's because people are too, firstly, people don't understand it. They're too ashamed. And they think the easiest way to get over the situation is to do the worst kind of thing, which is commit suicide. Josh, I'm so excited. This I can literally talk for hours, but we have to have Francis' question of the week. Monsieur Francis!
Okay.
Do you want maybe...
Let's have a really anxious one. Dude, I think this is so important. You know, this is why I'm so happy you came on the podcast, because... You know, we have these chats with comedians, musicians, whoever it is, and you're our first actual just author. But we've had authors on.
You've had authors on.
We had Spencer Matthews on. He's an author.
He wrote a book.
His book is so shit.
Is it? Have you read it?
No, obviously not.
What's it called?
I was going to read the audio book, and then I was like, no, it's called... I don't know. I'm a billionaire. No, I was born a billionaire. No, I don't know what it was called. I don't know, but it was...
But there was a few folks from Made in Chelsea.
Yeah, Ollie Locke did it. Yeah,
he writes fiction, I think, now.
He went to... Actually, Francis is an author, but he wrote a proper book.
What was yours?
I wrote a self-help book all about anxiety.
How did it go?
Obviously not well. I haven't cured anyone. No, it's called Bull's Jaws. Still available at every.
It was
good
great.
Bookstore.
It was great.
Bestseller, but whatever.
But you're our first, I suppose. Your job now.
Yeah, it is.
Being an author.
Is being an author.
That's
and
cool.
Writing about things. Yeah, it's an odd transition. I used to work in advertising, and it's a weird transition to doing lots of different things.
But I can tell you're very good, presenting. You've got a good advertising background.
Thank you, man. That's so kind of you.
I was talking
to me. I know.
No, I wasn't talking to you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
I was talking to Dr. Roberts. Are you a doctor yet?
No, sadly not. But that's something we're working towards.
Yeah.
Right, so, Francis. Okay. Let's have the question of the week.
All right. The question of the week is, what has been happening to the heads of Lego characters?
Jesus.
Well, should we say the faces of Lego characters?
What has been happening to the faces of Lego characters? All right, Josh, as our guest, you get to answer.
Since they started being produced.
So this is based on some research / a conversation I had on a stag do this very weekend with a doctor. And then whenever I meet a doctor, I always ask the question, what's
the
weirdest...
You only hang around with doctors now?
Exclusively.
That is it.
Exclusively.
If you're not a doctor, I fucking hate you.
But I was asking him, what is the weirdest thing you've ever pulled out of someone's bum? And one of the things was a Lego figurine.
Really?
So whilst I don't think this is the answer to your question, I'm going to punt. They're disappearing up people's bums.
Oh, well. Oh, my God. I love that one.
Well, that's one answer.
All right. I had a friend at school who used to have a trick. He used to have a very intense foreskin. He had a very, very loose, heavy foreskin.
I have a friend like this.
You have a friend, probably the same friend.
We call him the Anteater. Yeah. I'm not telling you his name.
Is his name Charlie?
Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Anyway, I have a friend called Charlie who has a very loose foreskin, and he used to do this trick where he used to hold it shut and pee, and it would go up like a balloon, and then he'd get it so big, he would then let go, and it would go everywhere.
This is a good boarding school education.
There we go, man. There we go. Anyway, I think what is happening to them is that they are getting stuck up people's noses.
You've gone noses, I've gone bums.
I was never going to go up any orifice, but then because you said bums, I've gone for noses.
All right.
Okay, you think they're going up people's noses?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. No, but I mean, yeah, all right.
Well, we'll find
out in part two.
There you go, Josh. Hey, Josh, sit back, relax. I've got my diary for you.
Ooh la la.
Here we go. It's a new year, so supposedly it's the time for New Year's resolutions. New darts, new ideas, new adventures, and new you. This is the time to step outside of your comfort zone and go for it. Hell yeah. And I have a friend who said to me he hadn't been on holiday for 2 years, so before Christmas, I said, this is your chance to change that. New year, new you, baby. I told him to book a flight to somewhere exotic, somewhere where he could relax but also have an adventure, so he chose Thailand.
Who's this?
It's my friend Alex. I was excited for him, over the moon for him. He booked his flight on the 1st of January, so having woken up with a hangover, the last thing he wanted to do was get a flight. He got to the airport, he checked his bags in, went to get his ticket, went through security, bought some useless things that you always have to buy every time you're at the airport, and ate some food. He then looked at the screen and saw his flight was boarding, so he made his way to the gate. While his ticket was being checked, the young air steward looked at him and said, "Sir, very exciting news. We are upgrading you." My buddy looked at him, not trying to overact, trying to act cool as if he didn't care. "Thank you, my friend," he replied. Inside, he was about to explode. Upgraded on a flight to Thailand while feeling hungover? What more could you want? This is it. The new year, the new him. He was ready to tackle whatever 2020 threw at him. He got onto the flight, saw the young steward and went over to him expecting to be taken to his seat. As he did, the steward looked at him, pointed at him with his two fingers and went, "Ah!" The guy was joking.
Oh.
What kind of air steward jokes about that? He sat in economy, more hungover and more pissed off as ever. He did, however, demand many glasses of white wine, all of them from first class. It's so true. He went onto the flight and the guy went, "Ah, kidding!" And he was like, "What do you mean you're kidding? You just joked about..."
That's the thing, they used to upgrade people all the time. They don't do it anymore.
They do it to me, mate.
No? Do they?
I stroll up and they go, "Hey! Hey, Jamie."
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They go, "Hey," they talk, "Hey, Jamie.
Hey.
Hey, hey, you, Jamie."
And they've come sit up here with us, the pilots from Brooklyn.
How many pilots are there? Come sit up here with the pilots.
I don't know. Two.
Hey, Josh. Hey, listen, are you having a fun time?
I'm having an excellent time.
Okay, well, listen, Doctor.
We must stop doing that. I'm not not qualified in any way, medically speaking.
All right, Dr. Josh Roberts, we will be back in part two with you in just a second.
I can't wait.
With more anxious Sweet. Talk. See you in part two.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.